You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody. And Bill, I'm checking Twitter the other day, and I see where Janine Garofalo has cited you as somebody that MSNBC specifically should... should be focused more on, that you're one of a handful, a very small elite list of progressive pundits that she thinks are worth paying attention to.
Do you know
her? Where did this come from?
I cannot quibble with the wisdom of Janine Garofalo. I can't believe we never talked about this.
Was this from your days on talk radio or something?
Yeah. So, in the Air America radio days, I mean, the reason why I was on Air America was that Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar reached out to me to be a weekly blogger guest. So I was on her show for, I can't remember when it actually went under, but it was several years.
And people also don't know you were also in The Truth About Cats and Dogs. And... did a stint in the Generation X, what was that Ben Stiller movie? Was she in that?
Reality Bites.
Reality Bites. Sam Cedar is friends with Marc Maron, I assume, right. Also from the radio
thing. That's right.
And I think he was on an episode of Maron's TV show.
Probably. So. I would think so. Yeah. But Janine Garofalo actually was just in Northampton last month on a stand-up tour, and I saw her, and we hung a little backstage. And she she is an avid beater, so she made some beaded necklaces and bracelets for my brood.
That makes perfect sense, actually. It's entirely believable.
So thank you, Janine, for the shout out. Much praise. As Gina Louise, my wife, noted, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Bill Scherer is in Cosmo. That's where she made the comments. So I've achieved another life goal.
That is awesome. Well, congratulations. You had a better week than Donald Trump.
So after the third debate, Politico sometimes does these pundit roundups where they ask, a dozen or so people a question after a debate. And the question of this one was, is the election over? And I wrote a little something where I said yes, and pretty much everyone else did too, so I'm not out on a limb on this one. Although, as our super fan Rob Nappel always points out, and you point out, my predictions are always wrong. But I'm going all in on this one. Hillary's going to win.
They are usually wrong.
But I did say there are four things we don't know in the election. Number one, will Hillary break 50%? And if she did, that would be the third time in a row a Democratic presidential candidate broke 50%, which has not happened since 1940. Number two, can Gary Johnson break 5%, which would qualify the Libertarians for federal campaign funds in 2020? Number three, can Evan McMullen get Utah's 6 electoral votes, which we talked about last week? And number four, can the Democrats actually take back the Senate or even the House? So I think those are the real those are the real questions on election day.
Let me ask you about number three.
Yeah.
There's a chance that McMullen would keep both sides under 270, which would throw it to the House.
But it'd have to be extraordinarily close for that to be the case.
Yeah. So I don't know how it's probably unlikely that would happen. But I think that might be the worst possible scenario. Like, I don't see how that, if that's what you're aiming to do, like if you want to make history, then fine. But in terms of actually, we have a country that is chaotic and divided. And I just feel like the worst possible scenario might be sending it to the House. And by the way, they would only have three choices. McMullen, Hillary, or Trump. And I think they would throw it to Trump probably.
Well, I guess that's a big question. Would the Republican House give it to Trump, even though he was clearly not the winner? Would they give it to McMullen because they realized that giving it to Trump is insane? Would there be massive pressure on them to say, come on, Hillary was the popular vote winner here. You can't go against that. Or do they deadlock think, like, and it ends up being the vice president who gets it because the vice president is decided by the Senate, and that's a top two choice.
So, okay, when you that's the next question. When you say the vice president, do you mean Joe Biden or do you mean Kaine versus Kaine
or
Pence?
Kaine or Pence.
So there's a way we could get Pence?
Yeah.
Is that – oh, well, then in that case, maybe this is the brilliant strategy.
I mean, that was the outcome Veep, in HBO's Veep, the House deadlocks and the Senate choice gets it. So
walk me through this real quick because I'm a little slow on the uptake. How does Pence – what is the scenario that Pence could get it?
So correct me if I'm wrong, DMZ, comment thread fact checkers, but my understanding
is –
We
know you well.
If the House deadlocks, and I think that would have to be before Inauguration Day. If the House can't come to a majority choice, then whoever is, and assuming the Senate doesn't deadlock, because that's a binary choice, so I guess that's not really possible to deadlock. And it's the current Senate, so it's the Republican Senate that's choosing. House deadlocks, Senate chooses Pence for VP. VP gets presidency by default come Inauguration Day. I believe that is the order of events.
All right. So we're really wading into an alternate history here, probably a little too in the weeds, but I think that helps me. We do need to get, like, it's good to talk about, like, even remote, even though it's a remote possibility, it's interesting to game it out because it's within the realm of possibility, I guess.
Right. Well, it was in the realm of possibility in mid-September after the pneumonia video and the polls looked close. But that was a blip over the course of the polling of the year. This has been my point for – this is another point I made in the Politico piece, and you know, others have talked about this too. You know, what is the turning point that Trump lost this? Was it the third debate? Was it the first debate? Was it the hot mic comments? Was it the cons? And was it the tax returns? And my point has been – he was losing the whole time. He was losing ever since he entered the race and he called Mexicans rapists and criminals. His unfavorables went over 60% the whole time. He has never led in the average against Hillary Clinton. There's just these brief moments.
He could have turned it around. He could have turned it around. Yeah. And I think there are two moments that matter the most. The con moment and the Hollywood, the Access Hollywood hot mic. Those are, I think, way more important than anything else.
Well, I mean, you could say if Trump was an entirely different human being who wasn't overtly bigoted against immigrants, that maybe...
Or if he was just more disciplined and willing to lie about it and disguise that bigotry,
I think the most important point here, and this, I think this is very important for you, sir, as someone who wants to reform and modernize the Republican Party, if you blame this on Trump's personal obnoxiousness, you can make the argument then that the bulk of Trump's platform could be a winning platform in the future.
I'm not about revisionist history. I'm about trying to fairly interpret what happened.
Well, I think it's a fair interpretation that being overtly anti-immigrant is political suicide, and you can prove that in this election. His unfavorables were bad from day one, and that was the thrust of his day one announcement speech.
No, but I've opposed Trump the entire time. There's not been a minute where I was voting for Donald Trump or supporting Trump. And I think that Trump is bad long-term electorally, and he's bad morally and ethically, more importantly. Having said all of that, I do believe that a month ago, 6 weeks ago, he could have turned things around and possibly won had he said things differently, had he run a different campaign. I don't think that's and by me admitting to that, I think that's reality as political analysis. I don't.
But what do you mean by different campaign? Do you mean pivoting on immigration? Or do you mean just issuing fewer insults to people?
I think that he could have, within the scope of who he is and what he has said, so without completely flip-flopping. By the way, let me, I'm turning my light on here. A quick diversion. A couple of people have, over time, have asked me about my setup here in this office. And one of the problems I have is that, I guess it's because of the leftists and the regulation that want to save energy. The lights in my office will, if you know, it never normally. And you're, if you're working, you're moving around, and so the lights stay on. But if I, like, the one time that I just sit still for an extended period is when I'm taping this show. And for some stupid reason, if you sit still in this office, the lights will all go off after about 5 minutes. And I've tried putting, there's like sensors, so I thought, well, maybe if I put like tape over those sensors, that it wouldn't happen, it still happened. So anyway, that is why my lights frequently will go off when I'm taping.
I think you're just digressing because you don't want to deal with the reality that Trump's immigration position was a political loser from the beginning.
No, I disagree, Bill. I disagree. It's a, I think his position is wrong. I do not like it. But I believe there is a way that he could have held that position and won the election by softening it in some ways, by talking about how we need to build the wall is actually a winner. I think that there's a way to play and pander to working class white angst and win the election if you do it in such a way that doesn't turn off, say, Republican college educated Republican women. So I'm not endorsing.
I'm not endorsing this all white strategy. They did not to win any additional Latino votes at all.
No, I wouldn't say that. But I would say because I reject the notion that he wouldn't have won, that he would have got 0% of Latino votes. But look, Donald Trump could have won this election. If you go back a month ago, like right before the first debate, he was down a couple points, you know, depending, maybe 3 or 4 points polling average. All he needed to get over the hump was college-educated white women. And what does he do? He attacks Alicia Machado. He interrupts Hillary Clinton. And then the Access Hollywood hot mic tape comes out. So I think clearly his biggest problem has been the misogynist side of him, not the immigrant side of him.
Right.
That's my take. I'm not endorsing, like I'm not saying it's a good thing that he could have won, despite, I think that the things he said that should have been disqualifying a year ago, the things he said a year ago that did disqualify him, in my view, I still think he could have won had he played his cards differently as recently as a month ago.
Well, I'm gonna disagree on 2 points.
Okay.
Number one, I mean, Trump, the race was tight in the general election trial heats at only 3 points throughout the entire year. One was the tail end of the Democratic primary, which I would argue the Bernie voters were sort of at peak, peak, if you will.
I like that.
And we'll hold it out briefly. Second point was the day after the Republican convention, and that was literally just one day. And then number three was in the aftermath of the pneumonia video. And once she was back on the trail, some people thought maybe it was Basket of Deplorables, but after she was back on the trail, those numbers started to widen again. None of that strikes me as an argument that Trump had something else up his sleeve that could have saved him, because some of the more incendiary stuff, you know, the cons, Machado, the debate performances, you know, he was losing before all that. He was losing before, he was losing throughout the primary in the general election heats.
The other caveat, Bill, is, and I know you'll push back on this and say there's no proof, but you know, the notion that there might be a couple of points that he might be under polling by a couple of points, that there may be people who You know, look, Hillary's not going to turn out millennials probably to the degree Obama did. She's not going to turn out African Americans probably to the degree that Obama did. And there may be working class white men who are going to wade through, you know, hell, crawl through broken glass to vote for Trump in places like Ohio and places like Iowa. And it's just he's had a horrible month and he's lost at least two of the last three, at least two of the three debates. And he's had this huge Access Hollywood scandal. I think that the last month has been very important. I don't think it was necessarily a foregone conclusion baked into the cake. Would Republicans be better off having read my book and nominated Marco Rubio? Of course. Of course. I would have loved to have seen Rubio talking in that debate against Hillary Clinton. I would have loved to have seen it, especially the stuff about the right to life and things like that. It will never, the Republican Party missed an amazing opportunity. And they could have, there's a chance, not a crazy chance, that if things had gone differently, the Republican Party could have this year elected president, the first Hispanic Republican president. I think they would have then held the U.S. Senate and the House. And that come January, Republicans could have had the presidency, the House, and the Senate, and a young new generation of leadership, and instead they threw it away on a thrice married billionaire casino magnate who invited Hillary Clinton to his wedding. That's what they did. They're idiots, basically. Well, and they deserve to lose. They got what they deserve.
I mean, one other point that's unrelated to the immigration issue, because your point was that if Republicans weren't losing the college educated whites, and particularly white women. And there's evidence now that he's losing white working class women after the hot mic comments. But saying if he wasn't losing those constituencies, he wouldn't have to do all that much better with Latinos and he could still pull it out.
Right, Bill. And let me just, I hate to jump in, but I'll say this real quick. Part of the reason for that is that we have an electoral college.
Right.
So a lot of Hispanics are in states, say like California or New York, that Hillary Clinton is going to win. It doesn't matter if she wins California by one vote or by 10 million votes. She gets the same number of electoral votes. A lot of the working class white voters that Trump might win are in places like Ohio and Pennsylvania. And that is why I always thought that Trump had this chance, even late in the game.
Well, Trump needed Latinos if you want to win states like Nevada and Colorado and Virginia.
And Arizona.
And Florida. Yeah. And he might lose Arizona now because of it. White working class may be enough to win Ohio and Iowa. Those are the two previously blue states that he's got the best shot in. Pennsylvania seems the hardest for him because of that college-educated white vote, particularly in the Philly suburbs. That seems to be his main obstacle there. Now, there was it wasn't a standalone report, but it was mentioned in a Politico story a couple weeks ago by Glenn Thrush that the Clinton focus groups show that those college-educated Republican leaners are very influenced by the climate change issue, and that rejecting climate science is a great wedge issue for Democrats to bring those soft Republicans, college-educated Republicans, over. So that raises the question whether any of the Republicans that were in the running could have survived a real focused onslaught on that issue. Because Rubio was really tied up in knots over, you know, whether, you know, climate change is real. So it wouldn't have been as wild and crazy an election. But there are outstanding questions, I think, both on immigration and climate change. And maybe you could also even argue women's issues like abortion, that all those things are not working for Republicans right now. And so if they blame everything on Trump's ticks,
yeah,
that they're not going to make the other readjustments that they need to be a competitive national party going forward.
Which is another reason, I may or may not, you know, we could quibble on your premise, but let's just assume that your premise is correct. We've missed a chance to find that out, to definitively find it out, you know, by nominating a candidate who would truly test whether or not presenting our viewpoint in a coherent and ironic way would lose. Maybe it's because our ideas are out of touch with the American people. Maybe it's because there's a liberal media that even the best, most eloquent conservative can't overcome. But we would have maybe tested that theory. We don't know, because Donald Trump has, among the many things he's done to us, is prevent that test from taking place.
You know, my whole argument that I go back to, that parties tend to change after losing presidential elections three times in a row, the underlying, which would happen to the Democrats after they lost throughout the 80s and they pivoted with Bill Clinton towards the middle, part of that underlying premise is, if you're losing three times in a row, the problem is not them, it's you. You can't blame, well, Barack Obama was a special candidate, so we couldn't win. You know, now it's Hillary Clinton. You know, she is apparently not the strongest candidate, and you still couldn't do it. This will be the sixth out of the last seven presidential elections where Republicans lost the presidential popular vote.
Right, but if Republicans lose this election, it will not be because the American public rejected conservative philosophy.
Well, when is it going to be that?
Donald Trump is not presenting.
How many times do you have to lose for it to be that?
I'm sorry?
How many times do you have to lose before it is that?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question. As you know, because you helped me edit Too Dumb to Fail, you know that I have a somewhat nuanced position, which I call modernize, not moderate. So I believe that conservative philosophy in general is correct and is a winning, wins every time it's actually tried. But we need to modernize. So that's where I come down. I'm not advocating a status quo, but you know, if a Ben Sasse or a Nikki Haley or a Marco Rubio were on the ballot and ran a good campaign, and the voters rejected that, to Hillary Clinton, who is not a great candidate, then I think it would be pretty clear that you can't just do a little tinkering. This isn't a marketing problem. It is a substantive problem. It doesn't mean our ideas are wrong, but it certainly means that the American public doesn't agree with them. We're not having that opportunity.
Well, I mean,
to find that.
I generally agree with what you said there. I won't go as far as to say conservatism wins every time it is properly tried. I think that's overstating it. But I wouldn't say Republicans must now become liberals because the country is firmly on the left and will never change. That's
right.
Overstating it too. But there are definitely, I think there's evidence that we're in a center-left time. Doesn't mean that every liberal issue wins across the board, but there are certain things like accepting climate science, accepting immigration reform, accepting contraception and health insurance packages, accepting the basic argument that there is a government role to play in solving problems. Doesn't mean that government solves everything, but I think running on a knee-jerk anti-government platform in the aftermath of the Bush years, I don't think works. I think you have to modernize and be nuanced and say, there are 21st century issues that we have to deal with. They're not Reagan era issues. They're not Bush era issues. And we have conservative based solutions for those problems.
I completely agree. I mean, I think that there's a reordering taking place, and I think that you're right. Attitudes and the public is shifting on things, but I don't see it as the public going to the left per se. I mean, I think it's changing, and there are conservative, Uber is something I talk about in the book, is an example of this. I mean, is it fair for me to say that, the cab companies and the unions and the sort of the big city boss system of giving out these medallions and that is democratic liberalism, and that Uber is this entrepreneurial, disruptive, conservative solution that makes our lives better. If that's the case, then that's one area where things are skewing more conservative. The truth is that things are changing. And in some cases for the better, in some cases for the worse. But I think it's an opportunity, you know, for conservatives. You know, I think we're getting more libertarian, more individualistic. In some cases, that's good. In some cases, it's bad. But I think, like, if it's school choice, then that's an area where I think we're winning against the teachers' unions. You know, I just think we're on the right side of that issue. And there's other issues that I think are going to be a lot more challenging in the 21st century for conservatives. But anyway, Republicans have all these governors, 30-some governorships, control the U.S. Senate, continuously control the U.S. Senate. And have the House of Representatives as well.
As of today. You know,
I forget that. Well, let's talk about that. We don't have a lot of time today. We're under the gun, but are we going to keep...
Before we jump into that, we don't have a lot of time, but I want to make one other point. So, you know, I gave this speech last week to the local chapter of the World Affairs Council, which was all about how the parties may be changing vis-a-vis foreign policy. That... The Democrats are now the National Security Party, and the Republicans really are not. I mean, this is the third election in a row where foreign policy arguments were made against Democratic nominee that aren't sticking. People thought that if there was a terrorist attack on American soil, that would boost Trump's numbers. That was not true.
I think that one deserves an asterisk.
Why is that? Why does it deserve an asterisk?
Because I think that. I think that terrorist attacks, by and large, would benefit Trump. But the one you're talking about happened. There were extenuating circumstances. It was at a gay nightclub. I assume you're not talking about San Bernardino. You're talking about the
San Bernardino and Orlando. Neither one of these things has benefited Republicans in the presidential election.
Well, look, I think Paris certainly benefited Trump, but I think that there are extenuating circumstances, and I think Trump's mishandling and sort of overplaying them are part of the story.
Previous default was that by its very nature, by the party's very nature, the public would turn to Republicans as a safe harbor when they feel their national security is threatened. And that has not happened in the last three elections.
If tomorrow there are videos of Christians being beheaded somewhere, Trump goes up in the polls.
I hope the theory doesn't get tested, but if it does, we would see.
Yes, me too.
So my point was in the speech that, you know, not that Hillary is a neocon. I specifically said that she's not, but she's definitely in the interventionist camp. And as is Obama, although Clinton is a couple ticks more hawkish than he is. And Trump, I called not an isolationist or a pacifist or even an anti-imperialist. He wants to take the oil in many cases, but he's really a nationalist. Whatever is in the national interest, whether it's intervention or not intervention, you know, it's based on narrow national interest, not global humanitarian interest. There's a big question going forward how the Republicans define themselves on foreign policy grounds post-Trump. And there's a question, those on the non-interventionist left, how comfortable do they feel remaining in a Hillary Clinton-led Democratic Party? So after this election, people may say, I'm not a Democrat anymore. I'm not a Republican anymore based on foreign policy issues because the definitions are changing. So I think it's another area where things are in flux.
Totally. And I think Republicans missed their opportunity this time to elect a young sort of intellectual conservative who could bridge, you know, sort of address the times and these issues and adapt and modernize, not moderate.
So if you want to see, my full 45-minute talk, which covers 118 years of American foreign policy, political positions in both parties, if you go to YouTube, you can go to worldaffairscouncil.com. You could also go to YouTube and Google my name and World Affairs Council, and it will pop up. Having said that, you are going to get into what happens with the House and Senate now.
Well, maybe we should. You tell me. Do we have to, should we tease this and hold it, or do you want to talk about it a little?
I bet there'll be more to talk about next week. I think we can do 5 minutes right. And still have more to talk about next week. I think the big
I know people can't get enough of this show. I'll just say we continue to see people out preaching the gospel about this on Twitter, about how the DMZ show, the best podcast. And let me say, if you don't like me trying to turn the lights on and off, then listen. It's better as a podcast. You don't need to see us, but people love what this thing that we've built here.
In my World Affairs Council intro, I was intrigued by the head of MassLive.com, which is a big statewide news organization in Massachusetts. I was in part of the introduction. She mentioned my Easy Bake Oven accident because she was watching the show, and I also did a debate at Springfield Technical Community College earlier that day, and one of the people in the audience came up to me and said, you know, he's a fan of the show. So once again,
people love this.
Once again, DMZ.
I mean, it's amazing because we literally do put no thought into this whatsoever. Maybe that's the secret.
That's the secret. That's how Trump's gotten.
It's like Donald Trump's debating style. Basically, we put about as much thought into this as Trump puts into his debate preparation. But I digress.
So the big question about House and Senate, I think, is how is turnout affected by the fact that the presidential election is seen as a fait accompli? Does it mean that Democrats become complacent, or people on the left feel more liberated to vote third party because they think it's not going to change the outcome? Although more specifically, if they don't show up, how would it affect down ballot? And or do Republicans who are soft Trump say, I never really wanted to vote for the guy in the first place. I know he's a loser. I'm so disgusted. I stay home. If it's more the latter than the former, then you could see a big swing in the Senate and maybe a takeover of the House. It'd have to be a really huge wave, not seeing the polls right now, for that to happen. But the way it would happen would be for that, a GOP turnout collapse while Democrat turnout is near full strength. That did not happen in 1996. 1996, Clinton was up by double digits in the CNN and the Gallup polls, and he ended up only winning by 8.5, and the Democrats lost 2 Senate seats.
There was a concerted effort, I think, that year to basically say Bill Clinton's going to win, so elect a Republican in the Senate, right, to balance, to provide checks and balances.
Right.
So Republicans are like Pat Toomey and I think Ayotte are flirting with that without being, because you got to be careful, right? Because Bob Dole was okay with Republicans doing that, but Donald Trump won't be. So if Toomey is too like obvious about that messaging, then Trump could come after him, and then that would, you know, Toomey needs to win. Toomey's in a tough spot, right? Because he needs like suburban moms in Philadelphia suburbs to vote for him, but he also needs Donald Trump fans in Harrisburg or whatever, you know.
Well, then, this is the big divide in the party. If the party's two camps, roughly speaking, can't get along, can't turn out for the same candidate, you know, that's not just bad in this election, that's bad long term. There's a Time story. Kelly Ayotte and John McCain came out saying, we're not going to vote for Trump after the hot mic comments. And they found examples of individual Trump supporters saying, well, I'm going to vote for the Democrat and teach them a lesson. I mean, I don't know how widespread it's going to be, but if that's happening, even by a small amount, these are not in Arizona so far, but New Hampshire's a tight race. Pennsylvania's a tight race. If you're losing a chunk.
Joe Heck in Nevada.
Yep.
Was heckled by a couple people. I think the media overblew it a little bit, but he was heckled by some Trump supporters when he announced his break from Trump. You've got Mark Kirk in Illinois, who I think everyone thinks is going.
He was already. I mean, Illinois and Wisconsin, I think, are the safe Dem seats.
Ron Johnson in Wisconsin, Probably going down.
The question was, is, it Richard Burr? Two more and
Richard
not lose
Burr?
Anything.
Is that an actor or a senator?
I'm sorry,
Burr in North Carolina.
Yeah, Burr. Yeah, because Portman is pretty good in Ohio. We're very good in Ohio. I mean, you're tight.
Portman's doing great, right?
But
so we're on the bubble, and Rubio's going to probably win.
He's led every poll that I've seen, but I've seen some close ones. I wouldn't totally write off Murphy in Florida, but you know, North Carolina, New Hampshire, Nevada. Missouri is getting close. I've seen some dead heat rates in Missouri. And I think we said Pennsylvania.
This is Blunt.
Yeah, Blunt versus Kander. Kander had the best ad of the cycle where he assembles his rifle blindfolded and dares Blunt to do the same thing while talking about his gun control position.
And Blunt, who is a consummate establishment insider, is hugging Trump in that state, the last I checked.
Right. Well, Trump is playing with Missouri, so that's not crazy.
Because he has to, yeah. So that brings us, though, to the denouement, which is... do you have to bet, or do Republicans hold the Senate, and do they hold the House?
I mean, to win the House, Democrats have to win literally every toss-up, every lean Republican district, as gauged by the Cook Report and by the Rothenberg-Gonzalez Report, and then I think maybe even like one or two more beyond that to actually take over.
But they say these waves break late. I mean, that's the one thing that people say. I don't remember that in 06, but...
Or 94.
But I'm hearing that it's the last week, that it just, the levee breaks. So you might not see it coming at this stage.
I mean, the only thing that we can say right now is there's a clear break in the presidential polling, the definite widening since mid-September, and now that race is pretty solidly, you know, 6-7 points in the averages. And the question becomes: Does that then cascade into the Senate and House races? And I don't think you're going to see. And to your point that the country is not deeply Democratic right now, I don't think you're going to see a bunch of Trump supporters say, "Okay, I'm Democrat all of a sudden," except for these handful of cases where they're mad at the Republican candidate.
The other thing too, Bill, we're all assuming that this could depress turnout for Hillary, like the fact that that's now almost a foregone conclusion. Why wouldn't there be a bandwagon effect? Why wouldn't there be like, yeah, I'm excited. She's going to kill Trump. I'm going to go vote for her. I'm going to make history the first woman president. Like, is that an absurd possibility?
Well, I think the more likely motivation on the left is we want to crush Trump. We want him to lose by a lot. We want to be a clear, unmistakable message that right. America rejects this. I think that is a different dynamic than 96. I mentioned 96 because it did happen that way once. There is some evidence of soft support for Hillary or flirtation with Stein or Johnson, people on the left who still haven't forgiven her, and the WikiLeaks stuff arguably stirs that up again. So I don't want to say definitively you're going to have this surge of Democrats at the end, but you do have some competing factors that we didn't see in 1996.
And crushing Trump actually, ironically, is also good for conservatives. I mean, if he's going to lose anyway, you know, putting aside the Senate, which is obviously a huge thing to put aside, if you're a conservative and you know, if Trump's going to lose anyway, then you would want him to lose by a landslide, just to utterly reject Trumpism.
Well, I think we have to leave it on that note, sir.
That way Sean Hannity can't blame the Never Trumpers if it's a landslide, and he'll try if it's not. Okay, so we're going to postpone our predictions. We're going to weasel out, but the good news is
we have two more shows, right?
So we're going to do a future show. I think we're going to have, maybe we should just go state by state and predict them. That would be fun.
Yeah.
You know, not the House, but the Senate.
But that should be for the first week of November.
All right, let's plan on it.
Okay.
All right, another award-winning show, as always here.
Always good to talk to you.
Follow us on Twitter at DMZ Show. Bill Scherer, good talking to you, and we'll see you next week.
All right, take care.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.